Storms of competing histories have raged over the Middle East for decades. Depending on who you talk to, Israel's claim to its land comes from biblical prophecy or as part of a political settlement to a Jewish migration problem in Europe in the 19th and 20th centuries, or as the settlement of a war between Jews and Arabs in 1948. Conversations with Palestinians produce parallel contrasts of history, prophecy, and politics, all mixed together. Amidst a new wave of violence in the Middle East, as the prospect dims for any settlement of issues that have been around since 1948 or 1967 or 1973, tensions have once again begun to rise. And this week, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu evoked one of the most powerful historical narratives, the Holocaust, to link the slaughter of Jews in Europe to an idea allegedly given to Adolf Hitler by the Muslim Grand Mufti of Jerusalem. The Mufti had his own Jewish problem, Netanyahu said, and gave Hitler a suggestion.
Hitler didn't want to exterminate the Jews at the time. He wanted to expel the Jews. And Haj Amin al-Husseini went to Hitler and said, if you expel them, they'll all come here. So what should I do with them? He asked. He said, burn them.
Joining us is Gabriel Rosenfeld, author of High Hitler, How the Nazi Past is Being Normalized in Contemporary Culture. He's a professor of history at Fairfield University. Comment on what Netanyahu has said historically here. Is it accurate?
Unfortunately, it's inaccurate. And the consensus of most historians, of course, is that Adolf Hitler had already come to the perspective that getting rid of the Jews through mass murder was the preferred policy. Most historians argue that by the summer, if not mid-fall of 1941, he had already abandoned a policy of mass deportation of the Jews to Central Asia in the interior of the Soviet Union, and had settled upon a policy of mass murder.
So describe now the temptation of Israeli leaders, of all kinds of leaders in the Middle East, to use the Holocaust in various ways to make political points.
The Holocaust, of course, is the central tragedy and trauma of the Jewish people in the modern era. And for the founders of the State of Israel, of course, it was an event that had to be addressed in all kinds of varieties of political discourse, whether it's David Ben-Gurion, who in the early 1960s approved of the kidnapping of Adolf Eichmann and his transport to Israel to stand trial for crimes against the Jewish people, or whether it's Menachem Begin comparing Yasser Arafat during the Lebanon War in the early 1980s to Hitler. It's a constant temptation. It's just in this case, Netanyahu, I think, is guilty of rhetorical overstretch, because at the level of causality, Hitler really didn't need Haj Amin al-Husseini to propose anything about killing the Jews. He had already settled upon that policy himself.
Do you think the Holocaust narrative and evocations of the Holocaust narrative put the brakes on that, that it's very easy for Israeli leaders to evoke the Holocaust for one reason or another and stop any kind of overtures towards negotiation and peace because it is such an easy button to push?
I think, unfortunately, that is the case. Not all examples of invoking the Holocaust are purely instrumentalized or are purely opportunistic. I do think that, for example, within Israeli society, there is a decent percentage of the population that has been afraid that if Iran gets a nuclear weapon, that the prospect of a quote-unquote second Holocaust might be in the offing. Although, of course, it's very tempting for politicians to incite certain feelings in their populations by harping upon these kinds of issues. And so when Benjamin Netanyahu was at the United Nations talking about we're 5 minutes before midnight and a second Holocaust is in the offing, that doesn't exactly de-escalate the discourse in the Middle East. And of course, for both sides, to try and come to any kind of mutually agreed upon settlement, the rhetoric has to be dialed down quite a bit.
Does that rhetoric invite on the other side, people saying, oh, this Holocaust is a big exaggeration, and then the deniers come out of the woodwork?
Absolutely. And one of the ironies, of course, is that already not only people on the anti-Zionist front, but also Israelis, who would be, of course, very much in support of Zionism, have already been comparing Netanyahu to a Holocaust denier and as someone who is whitewashing Hitler and, in a sense, normalizing, if not rehabilitating him, by claiming that up until the Grand Mufti suggested mass murder, he was taking a softer policy of mass deportation.
Springtime for Hitler and Germany.
How changeable is this narrative? As time goes on, you know, you have Mel Brooks playing around with, is this the moment that we can actually make jokes about Hitler, which is what, you know, his whole first movie was about, and then the revival with the Broadway show was about. And then, of course, this novel in Germany that's done so well that casts Hitler as a time-traveling talk show host.
It's interesting that you point this out. In my book, one of the things I was trying to alert readers to is the fact that the discourse that you see right now about Hitler in the Middle East, and frankly, the kind of comments that have also been way off base by Ben Carson about gun control, these kinds of examples of what I would call the universalization of the Nazi past, whereby various observers try and draw lessons for the present-day world from what allegedly was going on in the Third Reich, is that's the other side of the coin of what you just were alluding to in terms of the comedic turn in terms of how the Nazi past is being addressed these days. So whether it's The Producers, which of course in the late 60s was a smash film, whether you're talking about the novel Look Who's Back in Germany, which is also now a film, or other films like Quentin Tarantino's Inglourious Basterds, which has a very clear satirical streak to it, or the endless number of Hitler memes on the World Wide Web, whether it's catsthatlooklikehitler.com or Hipster Hitler, that's sort of the other example of what I would call normalization these days. It's completely losing sight of the ethical and moral lessons and the specificity of the Third Reich for the sake of making jokes and aestheticizing this period of history. And whether it's aestheticization or whether it's universalization, my basic argument, I suppose, is that the further away we get from the Nazi past and as the eyewitnesses die off, we are basically seeing the images of the Third Reich being created by people who play fast and loose with the facts and, frankly, don't have much knowledge about the specific historical reality, but they're opportunistically instrumentalizing this past for their own purposes.
Time is not on the side of truth in this case.
No, and of course, tragedy plus time equals comedy, as we're often told. And so the question is, as we lose sight of the historical reality of the Third Reich, we're going to probably see more and more of these kinds of reckless comparisons being made. And then we need to get to the fact checkers and have a nice discussion about who's right and who's wrong. And in one sense, I suppose that does keep the past alive. But one would hope that we could have an agreed upon factual basis of what actually happened and not waste our time trying to debunk false representations of the historical record.
Gabriel Rosenfeld is author of High Hitler, How the Nazi Past is Being Normalized in Contemporary Culture. He's a professor of history at Fairfield University. Thanks so much, Professor.
Thanks so much for having me.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.